Excuse me, everyone. It's the operator. Just need to inform all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Laurie. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCI call on the 2nd of February 2012. On the call today, we have Rosemary Sinclair and Cheryl Longdon Oll. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Hedlund, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. And we have apologies from Olivier Crepin-Neblon, Paul Redman, and Steve Metallic. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and over to you.
Tobias is in the AC room, I know.
Yes. I'm chasing another phone number for him. Okay, great. So if we go to the agenda, review the open action items, we've just got one carryover, which is me. I'm back and the academics are coming back, so if we can just carry that over to the next meeting, I think I should have the information by then. Our next three action items are all complete. So that's great.
And Rosemary, this is Barry. Just to provide some clarification about action item number two, and collaborating with Steve and the latest version of the advice letter, much all of the necessary information that was in the spreadsheet is now in the letter. And so I think we pretty much agreed that from this point forward, any changes to metrics or any of the metadata to that metric will occur in the letter from this point forward. And I'll just make sure to include all of the draft versions of the spreadsheet into the wiki room, and we'll just carry forward on the letter from this point.
Thanks, Barry. Cheryl here for the record. I wasn't clear on that. I thought we would still be maintaining the separate spreadsheet, but if we're going to close that off, as long as we note that that then gets closed and transferred, it's just wiki. If they're on different wiki pages, it can get really confusing for people doing future searches.
Correct. Yeah, I'll make sure they're all attached into one document, and
fantastic.
So they show the version history.
Terrific.
Okay, good. Were there any other comments, Barry, on other action items?
I think that'll do it.
Okay, great. So then that takes us to reviewing the third draft of the letter, which we've got ahead of us. Now I've got to get bigger. So I've only had the quickest scan on this, but it seemed to me to capture those changes that we talked through at the last meeting. Are there any comments from others on the call about changes that they were suggesting?
Rosemary, this is Barry. I did take a look through the letter, and certainly the changes that we had made to the definitions. I'll scroll down to page...
Barry, did you want really boring pedantry or major content at this point? Because if you want some pedantry, can you just go back up to page 2?
Yes.
I think there's a space missing between 2 and the somewhere, if memory serves. To that board resolution. In response to that, there's a space missing in between.
Second para. Or the first para, probably.
Okay. I have the... Give me just a second to capture the next version, and I'll capture these.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want pedantry, let me know. It's just I thought we were so close to, you know, tying it up with string, we didn't need to go back and do pedantry.
Oh, no, I'm just I'm talking in reference to the letter. Okay, in the soft copy that I have editing now, there is that space. Maybe that was probably an Adobe error when I converted it to the PDF.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
I would have thought you'd have had a little wiggly line under it, which, you know, we don't have. Sorry, I'll shut up again.
Yeah, you're doing a great line in pedantry.
Rosemary, you've worked with me long enough to know. Not unusual.
I can rely on you, Cheryl. That's what I know.
and I don't play the pedant in ICANN, you know. I only play the pedant in Australia. They don't know I'm a pedant.
Okay, I'm on page 3 now, and I think one of the big changes that we talked about from last call is just to maintain reference back to the original definition of consumer. Steve made sure that consumer was redefined in the bottom section of that page and also grouped with consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition.
Yes, I think that's worked out really well in terms of making it easy to read and
It is belts and braces, but yes, it's worth it.
Because you can, after you've been working on something for months, that other people will come, you know, without all that background embedded in their heads. Sorry, Barry.
No problem. This is Barry. And then I think the other major change here was with reference to registrants and users that is consistently used in consumer trust and consumer choice.
Registrants and users. Yeah, registrants and users.
And then the third change was with respect to competition and keeping in brackets for the time being and potential rivalry among as well, so that we capture, you know, the market share aspect or the competition with amongst those parties.
And those of us, Cheryl, here for the record, those of us who are not screamingly violent free market economists, myself in that number would be recognised. I don't have an objection to and potential rivalry among. I think what's in the square bracket is about as much as I can take, though. So if you wanted my view on to remove the bracket or not, I'm happy to have it unbracketed and left there, but I wouldn't want to go any further.
Okay. Tobias, have you had any further thoughts about that?
The reason for bracketing it last time was, this is Tobias, sorry for the record, was a bit related perhaps to my uncertainty about whether the wording sounds fine in English and that we might find a better wording. But I think the content is fine.
Native English reader and speaker. I have no problem with the language, but Rosemary and Barry could also advise on that.
I think what the language does is it pulls the issue out for those people who are very experienced in competition law and economics, and those folks may have some other way of expressing the point. So I think the way we've got it in the square brackets does two things. It indicates that we're interested in the issue of in the process of rivalry and highlights that issue for others who may have expertise in the field. I think it's really good the way we've got that now.
Good.
Sorry, Rosemary. Sorry. Cheryl here. I just want to be clear. You're not suggesting we leave it bracketed.
Well, I am actually.
I thought that was suggesting. Okay.
This is going to happen.
I think we might find ourselves at counterpoint here, my dear.
In what sense?
I would simply remove the square bracket. When I see a square bracket, I see something that is still for discussion and piece of language which is only potentially to stay in the document.
Okay.
And I'm suggesting that the language competition in bold, is defined as the quantity of diversity and potential rivalry among GTLD, TLD registry operators and registrars is a sentence which serves the purpose well.
I don't want my readers
at least, to see a square bracket and think that might be deleted by the team.
Oh, Well, if that's what you think the square bracket would mean, that it might be deleted, then I'm okay to remove the square bracket.
I'd like because to get back to Tobias on that.
Yes, in my understanding, yes, square brackets means possibly to be deleted or amended, while regular brackets would mean an addition. But it's really not a big issue. My question would be rather whether the team would also want to mention the word market in the definition of competition, which would somehow further accommodate the aspect of competition law, which is about rivalry in a market. This, I'm not really sure about how to formulate it, but by mentioning the word market, we would at least open up for that perspective. And in any case, this is not where things are decided. It's in the measures where we decide how we measure competition. So this is more something about an understanding of the general issue.
Yes.
So perhaps if it would be possible to add the word market somehow, for example, and potential rivalry in a market for GTLDs, TLD registry operators, and registrars. Then I think many people would easily recognize that as an element or a specialization of a very general definition of competition. So it would just be, instead of rivalry among, it would be rivalry in a market for.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I think the people...
Hang on, there you go. Can you see what I've just put in the chat?
Oh, hang on, I'll go back and have a look because I'm on my iPad.
I can read it to the record as well. Now, what I've asked Tobias in the chat is to change the words square bracketed currently, as previously discussed, and potential rivalry among, could be parenthetical, therefore an example, and the potential for market rivalry in, close parenthetical. In GTLD.
Yes, I think that would make sense, except for the in doesn't really fit well with the continuation of GTLDs, TLD registry operators, and so on. Because it wouldn't be in GTLDs.
Ah, okay, so we need to move the in.
You'd say
something like
in the market for GTLDs.
This was closer to my original wording, but I think we should at least at this stage avoid any discussions about what is the exact market, or is it one market or several markets. That's too complicated for this definition. But perhaps the way it is phrased now, and then, but then we would need an off or something after the parenthesis.
Yeah. Yeah, off makes sense.
How would that read now, Cheryl?
Off. Two seconds.
Yes, thanks.
Sorry, there's a space in my G and TLDs, but that's my lousy typing at this hour of the day in the absence of caffeine.
Okay, well, let's go with that then. I'm okay with that.
Good.
Yep, I'm happy with that. Can you make sense of that, Barry?
Yes, I'm just going to paste the final version.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I'm capturing this correctly and if I could type appropriately, it would be this.
Now, I know what my excuse is, Barry. What's yours?
My fingers are big. So competition, this is Barry, competition is defined as the quantity, diversity, and the potential for market rivalry of GPLD, PLD registry operators and registrars.
That's fine, excepting, Cheryl, for the transcript record, you have it in square brackets still, and it needs to be ordinary parenthetical. Ordinary parenthesis.
Why do we still want it in the brackets?
We don't. I just left them in there for purposes of noting that that's the area we're working on. But let me remove that.
Yes, I think we can take the brackets out now.
This is Tobias. I would agree because it's not really an example. It's connected with and.
Okay. That works.
Okay, I'm updating the next version of the document if everybody is happy with that.
Yep, I'm happy with that.
Okay, unfortunately you won't see it on the main screen. We just have a PDF up here, but I'm maintaining the fourth version in Word.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tobias. Can I just mention a related aspect here? Some of you might have seen a letter recently sent by the European Commission to ICANN on the issue of competition. That is more related to vertical integration, but
yeah.
Nevertheless, the competition people at the European Commission have asked ICANN to provide some measures for competition in this market. And at a later point in time, we might take a look at the proposed measures by the European Commission and see whether they overlap what we are planning to measure. Perhaps that would be an interesting way forward, because I would assume that at some point these comments would get back to us through the GAC if we don't take them into account now. If
yeah,
you
sure.
want, I can send out an email tomorrow and quote these aspects and see whether they can somehow be compared with our measures.
Cheryl here, Tobias. That would be perfect. I was actually going to interrupt. When I was trying to interrupt, it was to ask for exactly that. I think when we get, because there's not enough of us on the call today to do the measures effectively or reasonably. But, yeah, I think that would be an ideal opportunity to weave that. Known potential request into the documentation. Save us having to deal with it later, where I'm sure we would have to.
Yeah, I agree, Rosemary. Yeah, that would be helpful to us. That'd be great.
No problem.
Thank you.
And this is Barry. Just coming from the previous battle of vertical integration within ICANN, certainly the one of the key issues in that discussion was how do you define a market, and I from my read of our current use of the definition of competition, it is easy to define the scope of market with respect to PLD registry operators and registrars. Where it gets fuzzy is the GPLDs, and I think the point of contention was, do we view the market of all top-level domains, or do we view the market as competition within a particular top-level domain? And it's the only reason I'm bringing it up is it'll be interesting to see how the EU views that based on their previous or the most recent letter.
Well, it would be both.
This is Tobias. I don't recall the details in the letter, and at least I don't remember any specific market definition. I think what the Commission asked for was more the market share of different market actors without them specifying a market. And the second comment, yes, defining the market is always the critical issue in all such analyses, and it's quite challenging. And, well, I guess we will continue discussing that for some time.
Hi, all. It's Steve Delmianco just joining. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, hi, Steve. Cheryl here, Barry. Oh, sorry, Rosemary Barry. Just to follow on from that, I think what it allows us to do, if we were to integrate aspects of the proposed lines from the letter, it's only going to just put this back in play. It's not going to solve the issues, the particularly thorny issue that you reviewed then from the VI debacle. I think I can call it a debacle at this point in time. But it also doesn't become our problem. It becomes a problem for the review team.
Absolutely. This is Barry. Steve, we're glad that you joined. We were just reviewing through the changes from the previous version of in the definition. We're on page 3 right now. Everybody confirmed the reuse of consumer as combined with our other 3 definitions, and we just closed out on competition, and I'm maintaining the next version, or version 4 of the advice letter, and competition was changed to read the following. Competition is defined as the quantity, diversity, and the potential for market rivalry of GPLDs, TLD registry operators, and registrars. So basically the change was to remove the square bracket and to include the use of the word market in connection with rivalry.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Great.
All right. So what was the next issue, Barry?
Moving on to page 4, I don't believe we had any large changes amongst the notes of 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next big change will kind of start on page 5, where we get into the advice on the measures and the 3-year targets for defined terms.
Mm-hmm.
Let me move over to the soft copy because I see another space error. So it's definitely a flaw with just Adobe Acrobat in the conversion of PDF.
You don't want me to jump in, do you, Barry?
Okay. I Steve, you know, you're welcome to jump in at any time. I think the example of the 3-year targets, basically, you list in a small table the type of target and the example of targets for the UDRP complaint, and that was just to provide context as to what some of the targets for our measures may look like. I don't believe any of that changed. The next change that I believe was included in this latest version is the use of terms. And we've listed obtainable, reportable, and relative incidents there. If you like, I can read through those, and we can see if those are acceptable definitions that will provide more clarity to the readers.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, great.
Yep.
So notes about terms used in the tables of measures. First one being obtainable is a column heading indicating the working group's assessment of the level of effort and available access to raw data needed for each measure in the table.
Barry, this is Steve. I know that obtainable and reportable were innovations that you came up with something like 2 months ago, so I was taking a stab at defining them, but believe me, what was in your mind when you came up with obtainable? Is it anything close to what I came up with?
Mrs. Barry, it's actually better than what I envisioned, so it makes sense to me.
Mm. Yeah,
any comments?
Rosemary here, I think having done these sorts of exercises a number of times, there is quite a difference between obtainable and reportable, And I think these definitions capture that difference very well.
Yeah, yeah. Cheryl.
Okay, let's go to reportable.
Reportable is a column heading indicating the working group's assessment of any challenges in compiling and publicly disclosing each measure in the table.
Yep.
So that could be a confidentiality issue, or it could be a problem at turning raw data into a measure that we can report.
Difference between one jurisdiction and another, yeah, which is, I guess, under confidentiality, but not quite, because one part of the world might see it as a confidentiality issue and the others might not see it as an issue at all.
Yes.
So having come up with it, and Barry, is that definition close to what you had in mind for reportable?
Absolutely. All of these exceed what I had originally come up with.
Great. So one challenge for the team would be that if it were easy to combine obtainable and reportable into a single column, a single assessment of difficulty, it would simplify our table because they are very closely related, obtainable and reportable. If you had just one thing called reportable, it would encompass the difficulty to obtain. Is there anyone on the call who thinks we ought to combine them into a single column or leave it as is?
Cheryl here. I think we should definitely not combine them. Having served on a review team, I can see our giving them the pre-dissected version to chew on as being a good way to make sure that the matter is addressed early in their discussions and, most importantly, does not take up the huge amount of definitional time that it would, because it would occur very early in the dynamic of a review team. And trust me on this, the dynamic of a review team can be a very interesting beast indeed.
This is Steve. Let me clarify one thing. When you look at the obtainable reportable for all of our measures, in no case is reportable more difficult than obtainable. In no case did data was relatively easy to obtain but more difficult to report. Now, that may change if we add new measures, but so far, obtainable, the difficulty of obtainable would be sufficient to convey the difficulty because the confidentiality considerations of reporting it once we've obtained it in no case would have swayed any of the rows.
Cheryl, for the record, I still don't see a need to not have the separation in columns.
Rosemary, I feel the same way. When you say obtainable, then sometimes it means you get a truckload of data, so you've got it, but then there's just an impossible task in turning that data into a report that's timely, efficient, effective, you know, whatever. So I really feel that keeping these two definitions separated out is very practical, and it's says will highlight a number of issues for the review team and for other commenters on our draft who might have marvellous ideas about things they think ought to be measured. But once they think, okay, is the data really obtainable, and then can it be efficiently and effectively massaged into a report, they might come to a different conclusion. I feel in this that we've always had a principle of being very practical in terms of the measures, and so I really support leaving these two columns out quite clearly separated, particularly during this public comment phase.
Cheryl here, if I may just gild the lily a little more on what Rosemary has said here, and it's important from setting a precedence point of view. Remember, this is sort of the very, very most basic foundation stone of a whole lot of other stuff in the future to be built upon. And I think having this perhaps excessive amount of columning, I do see the point there, Steve, will ensure that when things do diverge in the future, and I'm pretty confident they probably will, that we still have this degree of pardon the pun, accountability on from whence these definitions came from in the first place, and what
the yardstick. I'm trying not to use words like measure, what the yardstick would be for how realistic or otherwise a measure has to be to get into the stable of what is collected and then created into reporting.
Steve, is there an issue that you think we should be thinking about?
Was that question for me?
Yes, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, so I brought it up because I'm, being an engineer, I'm always driven to simplify. If we had two distinctions where one would have sufficed, this would have been the time to eliminate the complexity as we ask the community to review it.
Yeah.
While I fully appreciate the distinction between obtainable and reportable, I try to capture that in the definitions, I did observe that at least the rows that have been scored thus far are all the material difficulty is in the obtainable column. In no case is reportable turn out to be the problem. So that would say that empirically, it doesn't change anything right now, the reportable column, because it's never a limiting factor on something that we could otherwise obtain. That being said, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. If you guys all want to keep the columns, then we ought to do that, and there's no extra work at all.
Yeah, this is Barry. I accept that as well as to what Steve just said. I would think that when we go to review pricing, and we'll come across this when we review the individual metrics, but I like how you explicitly call out publicly disclosing each measure and whether the team chooses to use pricing or include pricing within the advice letter or not. That might be an instance where reportable is more difficult than necessarily obtainable.
Yep.
Rosemary, that's a good example, Barry, and it includes leaving the definitions obtainable and reportable means that we can then be very comprehensive in terms of the measures, but very realistic about, you know, where there might be difficulties. So I like it the way it is. Yeah.
Cheryl here. Can I just say that building on that, I think we need to make sure that when we do our show and tell in Costa Rica, we draw this out as an example and the rationale for why it is as it is, and I believe it should be as it is the way.
Yeah, good.
Very good,
Cheryl.
Sorry.
Okay, I was the one who asked for these definitions in the last call, and the reason was simply that I wasn't really sure what we were meaning, and now I at least understand them fully. And I think we should perhaps postpone the question of whether we need the two categories or not as a matter of presentation. I think it's useful to have the two categories at least outlined initially, but perhaps if there are only two or three problems in terms of reportable, then we might consider whether a footnote or some other way of communicating the problematic reportability would suffice, so that the overall table would be easier to read. So, for example, we could remain the reportable as an explanatory aspect in the beginning, at least as a distinction, but then present the reporting problems differently, just as a note somewhere, if we only have two or three reporting issues. Perhaps that would be a compromise between the two positions. And it would make the reading of the measures a bit more easy.
Rosemary here. I actually think it's important that we leave reportable separately at the moment and not put it in that kind of note form, because I think that it will allow us to collect the varying views that may exist out there as to whether things are easily reportable or not. It's and I'm saying this from just experience, where when you start at the beginning of a process, you think that something is going to be easily obtainable and then easily reportable, and often that's not the case. So I think at this early phase, where we're thinking about issues for the review team to consider, to actually get feedback from the community about whether things are reportable would be a useful contribution to our final piece of work. At that point, we might say that, or we might decide that we could go for the kind of footnote approach rather than the separate column approach. But I think right now this is something where it would be useful for us to get community comment on whether things are reportable.
This is Steve, if I could add final to that.
Mm.
Tobias's point reminds me that it wouldn't necessarily have to be a footnote, but picking up on his point, imagine if the column just said obtainability and reportability, and we only indicated on any given measure where it wasn't easy. We would say things like doubtful to obtain on a row that was doubtful. We would never have to tell people if something was easy or moderate, and we might even say the source would be combined. So a row like UDRP complaints, we'd say easily obtainable from RPM providers.
Yeah.
So rather than a footnote, it could actually be that we consolidate all three columns into one, and it could be a different way to present it.
Yeah.
Maybe Tobias is right, and we wait until we're finished with the table, and I could run through and do a set of examples with the exceptions basis and a set as is. Thank you.
Yeah, Rosemary, I'm comfortable with that approach because it still brings out, in fact, perhaps more specifically, issue by issue, whether there's a problem with obtaining something or a problem with reporting something. So that still provides the clarity of focus that I think is really needed and the opportunity for feedback. So if you're happy to do that, Steve, after we look through the table, then I think that could be a way forward.
Yeah, because the way we have it now almost begs the question. Like, there might be one where we said difficult for obtainable, even though we indicated the source. What the happens is that the community will ask us all, starting at Costa Rica, they'll say, why did you say that was difficult? So we'll end up explaining verbally what we could have actually put in the row. For instance, we would have said difficult to obtain from law enforcement and government because they are not likely to respond to requests for information. Well, that's a mouthful, but it's what everybody really needs to know, because the word difficult doesn't convey nearly as rich information as that explanation would. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, Cheryl?
I actually put my hand up before Steve finished his clarification points there, and that is I'm certainly less fussed about the exact... thinness of, I guess is the best word I can come up with at this hour of the day, of the columns and how easy the columns are to read or not read at this stage. But I'm very fussed about us making sure this has been drawn out and properly discussed in the Costa Rica meeting, because I see this particular part of the report at this stage being the thing that the community will want to chew over most, but I don't want them to spend all their time just nitpicking on things that we've actually, you know, gone through reasonable amounts of time thinking over. I think we should present them with why things are, in our view, the way they are, and then get them to counterpoint, suggest, or help us see otherwise, if indeed we are to be seen otherwise. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Good. So, where are we, Barry?
All right, let's get into that table.
Just one more quick one. Relative incidence particular measure would divide the raw data by the total number of registrations in each GPLD zone evaluated. This is intended to put small or new GPLDs on a comparable basis with experience in larger or more established GPLDs.
And that's not new. That's been in there since V1.
Yep. Okay. All right, very good. Concluding on, moving on to page 6, measures of trust. Again, the definitions for consumer and consumer trust are included above the table. And we have our easier-to-read chart here that includes the columns attainable, reportable source, and the 3-year target. I think if everybody's accepting the first four, we definitely reviewed from our last call. The change here is on row 2, where the, I guess, the category was applied, which is measures related to confidence in registrations and resolutions, and then we list the availability of those. Then starting on about row 6, which is the next category, is measures related to confidence that TLD operators are fulfilling promises and ICANN policies. The question I had here, Steve, is why the registrar availability numbers wasn't included in the first category, measures related to confidence and registrations and resolutions, versus the second category.
So the first row underneath the one that says percentage uptime. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that could go in the first chunk. Yeah, let's move that up.
Yeah,
okay.
I agree. Yep.
Okay. Well, and you'll all notice that in this version, I put the 3-year targets in the same table, so it's all in one place. I also removed the color coding to make it easier to print, and can put the colors back, but for the time being, it was easier to manage without.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm on a cell, and I don't want to burden everyone with the crackly noise. So, Barry, if you'll lead us through at a healthy pace, we can hopefully get through a couple of these tables right now. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I just moved that up to the first category, and you're coming in fine and clear on our end. So second category, measures related to confidence that TLD operators are fulfilling promises and ICANN policies. The first metric, we'll go through these pretty quickly because I think we did review them on the last call. I just want to make sure we're reviewing. Relative incidence of notices issued to registry operators for contract or policy compliance matters. And the 3-year target was lower incidence than incidences in the legacy GPLDs. And if anybody has any, I'll just read through these quickly. If anybody has an issue, raise your hand or speak up, please. Next metric, relative incidence of breach notices issued to registrars for contractor policy compliance matters, the same 3-year target. Third measure, quantity and relative incidence of UDRP complaints.
Barry, it occurs to me that the first one, I should have had the word breach in front of the word notice to make these consistent. One's for registries, the other's registrars, and I think I probably should have had breach on each of them.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good catch. Okay, the third measure, and actually the next 5 measures are basically a distribution of UDRP complaints versus decisions for and violations, plus in addition to the URS notices, I think. Everybody should be happy with those. We reviewed through those on the last call.
Barry, Steve, if I might, the word decision is meant to be the same thing as a violation. It's a decision adverse to the owner of the name. The name had to be given up, So that's a decision. I don't know whether to call it an adverse decision or not, but it didn't want to make it a violation. So I don't think we really have three. We don't have three flavors. We have complaints and we have adverse decisions. I don't think we have complaints, decisions, and violations.
Oh, yes, and you did put in parentheses duplicate here.
Okay. Yeah, and in fact, I think the draft I circulated to everyone, more than likely I took out the duplicate and just went with
adversity.
Complaints and decisions.
Okay, great. I'll make sure I remove this row.
So it depends on what everyone's looking at. If you look, Barry, the one you have up, is it B3 that you have up in Adobe? I can't see it.
Yes, it is B3.
All right, so here's the thing. Is that right after the last call, I sent a B3 to Barry. He gave me a couple of ideas and comments, and then I sent a B3 to everyone else, which was slightly different than the original one I sent to Barry.
A V3.2
is about a 3.1. Oh, gosh, okay. So we all agree. I think we can work this up with groups when it comes to our different URLs.
Yeah.
The first thing we measure is the quantity of complaints, and the second thing we measure is decisions that went against the operator or against the domain owner, I should say the operator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if a UDRP went against the domain name owner, then that is the zone in which the domain name owner owns something that generated an adverse decision and they had to give it up. So that's an indication of a lack of trust. Okay. Barry, the next row in there is new. The decisions against registry operator arising from registry restrictions dispute resolutions procedure or the RRDRP. I added that. Isn't that designed expressly to say that a registry operator had some restrictions in their contract, and now there's been a dispute because somebody claims they're not following their own restrictions anymore? Like they said, they would only admit chartered banks to .bank, but now they're allowing non-chartered banks in. Someone would file an RRDRP, and I wrote in there that any adverse finding by the arbitrator, not just a percentage, but any adverse filing, is a strong indicator of a lack of trust in that particular zone. Comments?
Steve, just so I understand, the measure that you're referring to is quantity and relative incidence of registry operator URS violations?
No, it's the row called decisions against registry operator arising from RRDRPs.
I don't think we've got that on.
It's not on our version.
Yeah, correct.
Not be on the as in Adobe. But if you check the last email from me, I'm pretty sure it's the V3 that I sent to the group. I said before, I think that Barry could be saying version that's in him before I'm.
Yeah, that's correct, Steve. I didn't realize you made changes from that one, so I just used the one that you had sent me. That's positioned up here.
How long would it take you to pop up the new one, Barry?
Because
my idea of switching screens between the two fields could be quite challenging for.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we wait and let Barry bring that up? Thanks.
Yeah, because I know Rosemary has trouble even seeing the whole of the AC room, so. I fear what would happen if we were switching between screens as well.
Well, in all honesty, it's going to take me a little bit because I don't have that copy in front of me and I can't PDF it in time given a system restriction.
Right.
The changes are minimal, so I could handle it verbally.
Okay.
So I'll just quickly do that. This is one that we had discussed a few weeks ago and somehow managed not to have it in the table. I'm glad we caught it, but we have designed over the past several years something called the RRDRP, Registry Restrictions Dispute Resolution Procedure. And it's specifically designed to allow you to challenge a registry operator to say they're not following their own restrictions. And we've got to have that in here.
Yep.
Tailor-made for what we're doing.
I agree.
Great.
This is Tobias. I have your copy here, so I posted it in the chat. My question was, I think this is an interesting measure. I'm not sure I'm understanding fully what you mean by the three-year target of any adverse findings. I understand that any adverse findings would be an indication to the contrary, but I'm not sure the current wording gives us a good target.
Shouldn't it be zero or less than zero?
Yes, as few as possible adverse findings, something like that. Or as few as possible.
Cheryl, I would think a target would be, as few as possible is still wriggle room as far as I'm concerned, Tobias. I think the target should be zero or less, equal to or less than zero, is a target. Now, they'll probably fail to meet that target, but it's an appropriate target. We lost Steve?
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yes, he is disconnected.
Suzanne has dropped.
Natalie, sometimes calling out to a cell phone gives you greater stability than calling in from one.
All right, we can try dialing out Zoom then.
While we're waiting for Steve to come back, maybe I can just briefly mention one issue I had with several of these criteria. If we set zero here, we don't want any adverse decisions. Isn't that partly difficult? Because, in a sense, if I can want to manage this, then a good way of managing this or of achieving the target of zero would be not to send anything to arbitration through the RRDRP procedure.
I disagree with that. It's adverse.
It's a very rare thing. I think zero is relevant here, but not relevant elsewhere.
This is Steve. I lost you. I got back in. You're exactly right. An adverse finding is not the same thing as something going to arbitration. It means it went all the way through arbitration.
And it was adverse.
And Kim, that's right. A non-zero number of adverse findings is a significant indicator that a registry operator is failing to uphold consumer trust.
Well, you could also argue to the contrary and say that if there is a finding, then it actually shows that ICANN is able to manage consumer trust through the existing RPMs.
Conversely, it indicates that a registry operator did not follow their own restrictions. And it was that problem that gave rise to the eventual enforcement action. So I'll agree with you that I'm somewhat happy if ICANN's enforcement shows that it can use its enforcement tool. But it means that the GTLD expansion, writ large, is an expansion that created a situation where operators did not follow their own restrictions. And that's a more critical problem than the secondary effect of whether ICANN's enforcement eventually caught up with the violation.
Rosemary.
I'd prefer the positive error over the negative one, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think, Rosemary here, given the nervousness about the development of this market and the focus here on consumer trust, I think the way Steve's constructed the target for this measure is the right one. I support that. And as you say, Steve, it's after the full process has been exercised for there to be an adverse finding in a new market, I think should raise flags for, a number of stakeholders in ICANN. So I think this is an important measure and target.
I didn't mean to bring up a general... I didn't suggest to really change this. It's just that there are a few of these measures where one could simply manage to achieve this three-year target by not sending anything to arbitration, by not escalating things. And mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we somehow capture this difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is a way to perhaps in the text explain that we presume that ICANN will use its compliance department to manage any conflicts that happen, mm-hmm. that is basically an assumption for this measure. Or if we have a second measure that is already probably here in the table that can help us to highlight that fact that there are actually issues that are escalated, then we can at least face that possible future criticism.
Tobias,
delete it here or change it here.
Tobias, this is Steve. Yeah, thanks for that clarification. But in the instance of a RRDRP, the complainant is a community member, not ICANN. And the community member is the one who petitions for something to go to a dispute provider. I don't really think that it's an ICANN initiative that has to be here.
They're not gatekeepers.
Right, okay. Yes, thanks. That was very important. I forgot about that.
However, Tobias, I wouldn't mind asking, perhaps not in the table, but perhaps somewhere in text, it might be interesting to have an assurance of public reportability on escalation trends. Now, I would be highly surprised if the compliance people weren't creating these reports already, but where they go to and how they will be handled in the future in the new GTLD environment might be a little murkier than what they say and where they are now and who has access to them. Perhaps it would be appropriate just to remind that the what could be considered internal reporting of compliance also has a public value in this context.
This is Steve. If I could address that, there are items above us that we just discussed that have to do with breach notices. That is, in fact, staff that escalates things to breach notice.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think the point Tobias raises is if you simply don't issue any breach notices, then your stats look good.
Okay, great. And Barry Cobb...
Lower layer that I think we need to suggest is also captured. Now, I think there probably are reportability issues that are already being created in ongoing dashboards or whatever in the wonderful world of ICANN compliance to do exactly this. And indeed, they may be, to some extent, publicly accessible. But they need to be accessible to someone who is able to bring it into this trust and consumer trust context.
This is Steve. I love that line of thinking, and we did on our previous call discuss what ICANN compliance steps are, and Barry did some research for us and circulated the compliance's presentation from Dakar, where the first measurable indication that they think that an operator is in violation. And we concluded that the word breach notice was the term of art for when the staff puts something in writing and sends it over the line to the operator, to which they have to respond. But if there were an earlier indication, such as complaints from the community, that would be a great thing for us to add. And one of the minds might be, who is accuracy, for
yeah,
instance, if there are complaints.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you'll see that later on in this table down below, there are the items we added from Olivier, and that might be a good place to pick up.
Cheryl, look, Steve, I'm putting on my at-large and ALAC hat here. I think this is hugely important from my community's perspective. We have a number of very active at-large members, but also a complete ALF that's dedicated to things like watchdogging, who is accuracy, and any other time anybody ever tripped over in their known life. Now, as annoying as all of this flooding of sometimes highly irrelevant information can be, what's even more annoying is that we never get to discuss what's happened to it having gone into the funnel that becomes ICANN compliance issues until we actually sit down face-to-face three times a year with ICANN compliance, and then they tell us that how it's been dealt with. There'd be a whole lot of more relaxed people in between sessions of those little interactions if there was an ongoing dashboard type thing. And that's at the current level of TLDs, I fear, for what will happen in the new brave new world.
Cheryl, for you to call compliance a funnel is a flattery they may not even deserve. It's more like a black hole. So I concur and would recommend we add a row. We had a row indicating the quantity of complaints on who is accuracy, and I do think there is a logical place for it on the next page.
Thanks for that, Steve. I'm actually a fan of compliance. I think they're doing their best to try harder, but they're under-resourced.
This is Tobias. I think we're getting to an interesting issue here, and I'm glad that you're following this up. For me, some of the basic problem is that if this was a piece of research and my finding would be there are 10 breach notices, then I could either argue that, oh, this is a very good notice, because it shows actually that the compliance department is very active. Or you could say it's a very negative sign because it shows that there are 10 really big problems somewhere. And I think it's still relevant to measure these, but they can be interpreted in different ways. And perhaps if we correlate them nicely with the elements you mentioned now, then we can avoid some of this discussion.
Hear, hear. I agree, Tobias. I think it's a matter of making sure we look at the whole relevancy of all the critical control points in the issues pathway, from a I think something might be happening, put in a community complaint, and by the way, it turns out I'm wrong, right through to all of the risks and critical control points that go up to a full-blown decision.
Again. This is Steve. If we were to measure an expansion of a town or a district, and we would measure the amount of crimes that are reported in that district, and it was much greater than expectations or much greater than older districts, we'd be very concerned about that. We might also learn that the police do a good job of investigating and solving some of those crimes after the fact, and that would give us some amount of comfort. But there's no way that enforcement alone, after the fact, could mask a greater incidence of crime in the new TLD space, a greater incidence of abuse in the new TLD space. So I'm on board measuring both. Enforcement allows us to ignore the fact that there's a greater than we have failed to meet the promise of the new TLD expansion. I wouldn't say a black and white fail, but we have under...
It allows us to look at the risk management outcomes as well, and that will be something that the review team, I would have thought, will be then making recommendations on. They'll look at the risk landscape, the risk actuality, and then look at risk mitigation, if I can put it in those terms, and make recommendations to reduce risk for future.
Yeah, why don't we move on? It's already 2:15. The last two rows on page 6 were, and by the way, Barry, were you able to put up the new doc, or am I just sort of...
We've got the new doc up. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well done. So below the RRDRP, you'll see there's two rows for URS complaints and URS decisions. And the trick about URS is we can't compare it to legacy GTLDs because there is no such thing as URS in the legacy GTLDs yet. And therefore, we need to come up with a percentage target because this is relative incident. And I put the letter X in there because I don't know what number to put there. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
You've got to be realistic, Cheryl, here for the record. You've got to be realistic. There's not going to be none. But what's unacceptably high, I don't think we can actually say. Because get back into the other system of if it's a robust system, then the incidence should be, the incidence could be high, but the decisions could be quite a different number.
Barry Cobb, this is Steve. URS is most akin to a UDRP. In fact, it's supposed to be a faster form of a UDRP. Barry, is there a way to give us statistics on the quantity and incidence of, relative incidence of UDRP complaints and decisions in the .com zone for 2011? It's really just two numbers. It's a raw number of UDRP complaints, and we would divide that by the total number of registrations and then the raw number of decisions in UDRP. And maybe those two numbers could be the targets we would use. Thank you.
Not a bad starting point if we can get the data.
This is Barry. I'll have to take that one offline. I'm not sure that I can collect that data already. And, you know, the key element here is the source. We would be going to third-party providers like UDRPsearch.com to even start to get some of those numbers.
Does WIPO handle all UDRPs?
I don't believe so. I think there's several providers out there. They I think WIPO handles the majority of them. But, you know, shooting off the hip, I'd still be hesitant to think that we were trying to compare apples with apples.
I'm afraid you're right. It would be better to use a smaller zone than COM.
Hmm. But which one?
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, this Barry, personally, I would say that, you know, in terms of a three-year target, it would almost be safer to say is that, you know, this is a brand new metric, a brand new process. There is no baseline that's truly equitable.
One idea is to pick a metric that says it's relative to the previous year by saying that it has to, it's the third type of target I described in the prior page called relative to prior period.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the number of complaints in new GTLDs in 2015 should be a fraction of the number in 2014, or should be lower than. What do you guys think about that for the target?
Cheryl here, I think that's absolutely the only way we can really go at this point. And I was going to say what we perhaps need to do is just explain that the baseline, the very first X, will be a measure X months out. And I'm not saying X months out because I'm not sure it actually needs to be 12 months out. I think we're going to have more volatility in terms of complaint incidents at least and perhaps even some decisions in a shorter space of time when new GTLDs start than we will in any other point of time after that, if you know what I mean.
I do, but this is a three-year target the board asked us for,
yeah.
Which ironically, 3 years out is even after the review team has probably done its work. They do their work 1 year out.
But so, we need to give some baseline metrics, so let's suggest that the baseline metric, the bit that needs to be collected, is X months out after go-live.
I understand you, and yet we could also suggest that the target for year three is that it be lower than whatever was observed in year two. What do you think of that as a way to do a three-year target? It needs to be improving.
Well, that then makes them do year two, so yeah, that's fine.
Cool. So I would write in declining percentage and quantity. So declining percentage would be the phrase that would be used on these two rows for the column under three-year targets.
Can we just make sure they realize that's not starting at year three, but starting compared to year one and two?
Good point. So that year three is lower percentage than year two. Would it be better to write it that way?
Yeah.
Great. I wrote year three is a lower percentage than year two.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And I would put the same thing in the
quality.
URS decisions row.
Yep.
And then let's move on to the next page,
mm-hmm.
which is I think that this probably doesn't belong here. The URS violations is the same thing as a URS decision, and it's not the registry operator who gets the URS. Isn't it the domain name holder? And Barry, could you clarify for us on this? A URS, a rapid suspension, is a suspension of a domain name. It's really a judgment against whoever registered the name who shouldn't have. It's not a complaint about the registry per se.
This is Barry. I'm drawing a blank here because I just recall kind of pulling this out from the original deck.
So, Barry, my view is that this is something we covered earlier in the call, in that adverse decisions is really the key, not violations.
Yep.
Because URS also goes through an arbitrator, so this row is probably not needed.
That's a delete, yep.
Cool. And now we have one for law enforcement and governments.
Yes. Target's an issue.
Sure is. I don't know. Again, we could put in declining to indicate that things are improving by the third year.
You know, that's got a great deal of sense.
I do too. I think it's a great approach that, you know, what you're trying to get is improvement, because that's what we're trying to get. It's not about the absolute numbers. It's about whether the numbers that indicate bad behavior are decreasing over the three-year period.
Cool. All right, great. The next one is domain takedowns. I don't exactly remember where this came from.
That's one of Olivier's.
Is Olivier on the call with us today?
No, he's not.
The next six rows are all from Olivier, and it would be great to get some more guidance on the obtainable, reportable source and targets. You notice that for targets, I took a shot at saying that the new TTLDs should be having, if they're better, they should be better than the legacy TTLDs. Because if you recall, we've been told so many times that .com is a large source for registry abuse, for abuse by registrants, because it's so large and people use it the most. And we are told over and over again that the new TTLD expansion won't see nearly as much cyber squatting, won't see nearly as much crime, malware, or abuse.
Yes.
Because it's not as popular as .com. And if that's the case, the percentage of all six of these should be lower than in the legacy GTLDs as a whole.
And that measure itself, Steve, will be fascinating, because there is a counter view, as you well know, that what we're doing is opening up green fields.
Okay. I'm afraid. I hope you're not right about that, but this would be putting a really sharp point on this, and the trick is we need to put some meat on the bones of all six of Olivier's rows. I don't know where, what is the source of these information items, and what is the difficulty to obtain and report.
This is Barry. In terms of spam, you know, there's providers like Spam House that do a lot of metrics.
Yep. There'd be third-party well-established, accredited sources for most of it, I would have thought.
I wonder if Olivier could suggest those sources.
I actually thought he did when he was talking about them, as examples like Spam House.
I'm sorry, but I don't recall seeing the sources, and that's why these are blank. It might be easy to fill them in, but I put, for example, Spam House in the source of honeypot spam. What about the next one? Fraudulent transactions.
Phishing would be the APWG.
Yep. And ditto with the next one?
Correct.
Who is can actually come back to...
I can.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting... Next, last one.
Errors in new GLD designs, which is...
This would be...
Okay, you've drifted into techie land where I start to blur.
This is Barry. I would put registry operators because these kinds of things can be found within the zone files.
Mm-hmm.
But who would do the audit to feed to determine the number of errors? That would be the registries themselves. So the source would be somebody doing an audit. I don't know who that person is.
Interestingly enough, if I can put on my DSSA hat for a moment. Whilst it doesn't exist now, the suggestion that ICANN, in its own risk analysis for the security and stability of what we're supposed to be looking after, may indeed require that we keep our finger on the pulse of these things in the future, because we're going to be proposing an ongoing risk assessment model, which means frequent review of exactly this type of information. What we're doing right now is sourcing every time we bring up one of what is a possible risk to security stability. We find someone on the call, and that's between 20 and 30 people, has the data and says, yes, this has happened and here is when it's happened. It's simply data that exists and is not being collected in a coordinated manner. But even within ICANN's current DSSA group, you could very easily collect that data should you be so motivated to do so. So I put it as moderate, but actually it's actually more obtainable than moderate. But simply because no one's actually orchestrated it yet, I guess it probably would be moderate, and ICANN should be able to, in its ESSAC component, be able to do that.
So is the source regular zone audits, and we just don't know by whom, in which case I could take the question mark off and indicate moderate, and regular zone audits.
Yep.
We jumped over the row above is the one on inaccurate or suspect who is, and that is the row about which the number of complaints needs to be worked into the measure.
But
you recall earlier in the discussion when Tobias was discussing that too. So I think we need to change the wording, the quantity and relative incidence of complaints regarding inaccurate, invalid, or suspect who is.
Yeah.
Shall I repeat that, or is that okay?
No, adding complaints in there.
Yes, good.
Yes, good. And these would be easy and easy.
Yep.
Oh, good. Ah, fantastic.
And this is Barry for the spam, the phishing and phishing rows. Shall we just say moderate, and moderate for obtainable?
Actually,
I
think they're easy. I think the quantity, I think the first three, because they're already out there in public reporting. So it's easy. The reportability might be more difficult, but the access, I think, it's very obtainable.
If they're done for all zones, they may only be done for selected zones, about which APWG has a high degree of concern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they do comprehensive or targeted. The honeypot, for instance, may not do every single one of 1,500 new GTLDs. Moderate at best.
All right.
For that reason.
Yeah.
Can we explain why then that is moderate as opposed to easy?
Yeah, that gets to my notion of wanting to explain that. I'll jam it into the cell. It might lead us to that plan B that I discussed earlier on the call.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, Rosemary, here we need to just be mindful that we're almost out of time on this call, but we've done a huge amount of work today getting through this consumer trust table. We've got the consumer choice and competition to go, but my suggestion is that we do that on the next call. How does everyone feel about that?
This is Steve. I support that idea, but I do recommend we do the next call as soon as we possibly can.
And
yes,
this is Terry. The next call is scheduled for Tuesday the 7th at a regular time. It's scheduled for an hour and a half. Perhaps I can send out an email to the group that kind of unofficially plan on maybe 2 hours just so that we can try to finish it up.
I think we need
Sounds
to get
okay.
it ahead. Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, Barry. Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, we only have two pages left, a page and a half left.
Yeah,
but
right.
it's some of the heaviest lifting on our plate.
I'd yeah. rather plan 2 hours and be pleased to have 5 minutes early.
Good. Goodbye, me. So, Barry, after this call, this is Steve. Barry, if you don't mind, would you send me the edits you made while I was late for the call? I'll combine them with a new draft for V4, and I will circulate it to everyone.
Very good. Yes, I started a version 3.5, and I'll send that right now.
Fabulous.
And this is Barry. Just one last thing, heads up. The public session for Costa Rica is tentatively scheduled for Wednesday from 11 to 12:30. So we'll be able to beat lunch, and we won't conflict with the GNSO public session. And so hopefully we'll get it for an hour
Well
and a half.
Done, man. Well done.
Right.
Well done. Would you send an email to the entire group indicating that date and time, please?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Natalie, just before I go, I have just opened up my diary, and you know that the ICANN diary and various other diaries feed into my diary. My diary is now blank after Sunday. Now, you and Gisela have access to my diary, or Heidi and Gisela, anyway. I am now in near hysteria because there is literally nothing in my personal diary after Sunday. Something scary has happened. So things as simple as 2-hour meeting next week for us needs to go back in, but something really bad's happened in my Google Calendar.
Maybe they've fired all of us volunteers, Cheryl.
Honey, this isn't just the ICANN. This is even my personal diary's gone.
Oh, dear.
Well, the rest of us can see it because Google shares it with everyone else.
You know what? I actually don't care about that. That I'm happy with. Not having it, I'm not.
You want it to be shared with you, Cheryl.
I'd like it to exist. It could be printed on the front page of the morning tabloids. As long as it exists, it appears not to exist past Sunday. Okay. Bye. But basically, if Natalie, can you let G know that, you know, everything she's done may not be there?
Gone somewhere else. All right, everybody. We'll chat
okay.
again on the
Hopefully
show.
It's fine.
All right, signing off.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.